The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
This is not good for Nick Sirianni. That's my impression.
Welcome back in, everybody, to Monday's edition of Birds 365. June 10th, moving right along in the NFL offseason, joined now by Jeff Kerr from CBS Sports. Jeff, what's going on, man? How you doing this Monday?
Should I get John McMullen fired up now, or should I wait 5 minutes?
Get him fired up, Jeff.
Go ahead. Go.
So, apparently Darius Slay said the Eagles aren't wearing Kelly Green uniforms this year.
Oh, what a devastating blow. Devastating. I didn't see Slay.
John, you don't care about uniforms. Are you
shockingly, I didn't ask Slay what uniforms they were wearing. Shockingly,
that's your favorite topic, that and jersey numbers.
You're telling me they brought back the Kelly Greens for a single season? They made that stink for a single season?
They have the right to do that. I mean,
I know they have the right to do it. I'm just questioning.
Jeff's a uniform guy. This is all Jeff. I have no information.
I have to ask around. But
they have so many uniform rules, it's absurd. Now they've liberalized them. Now. And by the way, I will say I'm surprised it's taken the NFL this long to make all these alternate jerseys, alternate helmets, do like Oregon. I'm surprised teams don't wear a different uniform every day by this point. See, if there's a buck to be made, they try to make it.
This is what shocks me. Like, you bring it back, you're already selling Kelly Green, Saquon Barkley jerseys. You would think they're wearing them this year.
The cash register must have slowed on the Kelly Green, and they said, all right, let's go
back. I don't think it has slowed. That's probably part of the strategy, is keep it rare, so when it does pop up.
Everybody goes crazy for it.
What I need to figure out is, and the NFL, they're good at getting back to me on stuff like this. They are approving a second alternate helmet. It's just, when are they doing it? So the black helmets will be coming back soon.
Well, the Vikings put out their winter wonderland, goofy, all white uniforms last week. They sent out that press release. So they have a different helmet. I don't understand.
And it's weird, too, because they came out with a throwback last year. Is their throwback gone?
Yeah, I don't get
it. I wonder if the Kelly Green has anything to do with the Brazil game, Jeff. I mean, we saw that thing that Josh Jacobs was saying. I know the NFL kind of came out and disputed it, but.
Nonsense.
Hey, Josh still said it. I don't know if they're
well. That's because. But where did that start? I did read somebody.
You know what? You can blame me for that. I wrote something about that like 3 months ago because there was talk about they might not be able to wear green because of the Corinthians thing, and I'm like, I don't think this is really gonna. And I even put like at the end, I don't even think this is gonna be the case, but. It is funny how there's three teams that their primary uniform is green. And the NFL picked two of them.
Yeah, they probably didn't realize. But, there's all these rumors about, this, and you're going to get attacked if you wear green and this or that, blah, blah, blah. It's not the case, and everybody's going to be fine. And you can wear your green jersey, and everybody's going to wear their green jerseys. And the people of Brazil aren't going to say, oh, you're disrespecting my soccer team or this soccer team or football, whatever they call it, but I wouldn't worry about it.
I wouldn't hear it. I mean, it was a fun story, and the NFL definitely shot it down like the second they could. I mean,
they shut up. I should have. I did read where it started. Somebody made a flippant comment, and all of a sudden it becomes a thing. Sort of like A.J. Brown's going to get traded locally. You know, somebody does a poll, and all of a sudden it becomes a national story. I think that's similar just to a larger level. It was some goofy comment, and then it just exploded. So the NFL's kind of shot that down. Yeah. Nobody's worried about wearing green. Somebody's going to wear green. I don't know if it's Eagles, Packers. I don't know. And technically, the Eagles are the home team, so they get the decision. I believe that's still the rule, right?
And in theory, like, they could have avoided all of it, too. Like, there was a way to get a loophole with the whole teams wearing
green. They could have picked Cleveland.
They could have.
Yeah, there you go. Problem solved.
The Eagles could have wore black, and the Packers could have wore their throwbacks.
Yeah.
Well, Packers is a lot better game there for the NFL. They got the two young up and coming.
Not the better game for the Eagles.
Not the better game for the Eagles, but for the NFL, they're selling tickets, ratings, revenue, all sorts of things. This is a good NFC matchup. Two young quarterbacks who are breaking out.
I'm surprised Jeffrey Lurie didn't push back on that more. I'll be honest, but hey, maybe selling the stake in the team. Did we talk about that, by the way?
Have we talked about that?
We didn't talk about it with Jeff Kerr. We did talk about it on Friday, Johnny Mac. But yeah, Jeff, what's your takeaway on that?
Yeah.
I mean, there's this whole provision thing in the NFL now where I got to read the whole details up, but a couple teams are going to be doing this where you can kind of sell a minority stake in the team, like 5-10%. And, you know, that's – I know a couple teams were interested in doing that. I think the Bills and the Dolphins were two other teams that are contemplating doing it. So, I mean, if it's a chance for Rob McAnally or Bradley Cooper, or I mean, I said to McMullen here, John Milton should buy a minority stake.
Well, he could. That's the problem. I mean, well, Jeffrey. So I did them. Jeffrey bought the team for, you know, 190 something million.
195 million it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in 94, I think it was. So even if you do that inflation adjusted, it's just a little bit, 410 million or so, somewhere in that range. And the valuation is 7.5 billion now. But I think a lot of people don't understand that's not liquidity. So basically, if you sell 10% at a 7.5 billion evaluation, you make 750 million. And that almost doubles your original investment, and you still got total control of your team. So that's what it's about. And the NFL had to liberalize the rules a little bit for the Washington Commanders purchase because it was so much money. So Josh Harris had to take on investors. So if he's allowed to, everybody else is allowed to. And that means they can make a boatload of money as long as you could find a really rich guy to buy in and have no power. Now, some like it because of ego, but guys like Rob McElhaney, and that'd be a cool story, Bradley Cooper, they don't have that much money. I mean,
I wonder if they open up this box, though, with the private equity, and then you have international guys and Saudis trying to buy in. I wonder if they open up. Look, there's money to be made. The NFL is going to go for it.
But the NFL better be careful with the Saudis. Because they have the money to
they can buy anything. I mean, there's going to be a game in Dubai. There's going to be one. It's just, when are they going to do it?
Yeah, they can do. You know, they could start their own league if they decided to, like they did with golf, and say, hey, we're going to buy all the players. NFL better be wary of that. Sounds crazy, but you know, the beauty of the NFL, even though they're making inroads, it's not that popular as a worldwide sport, right? They're
that's correct. Yeah, it's an American sport, football. It's not nearly as popular as many internationals
because nobody understands it. The rules are so arcane and so over legislated.
Our own fans don't understand the
rules. Yeah. And when you take it to a different country who's not used to it, they're like, what the hell is going on? What is this? Now, they've made significant inroads in Europe, obviously, but long way to go. And they're taking the first step in with Brazil, obviously, with the Eagles. And that's part of why Jeffrey Lurie didn't push back on the Packers. Because
did you know this, Sean? Brazil's like one of the top four countries that watch football, American football.
Well, it's, you know, Sao Paulo is one of the biggest metropolises in the world.
Yeah, so ever. Yeah. It's
so it doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of people. No, it probably doesn't surprise me. They have more people than most of the other European countries. So, yeah, it's not a surprise. I mean, they're going there for a reason.
Yeah. And
yeah,
look, I'm excited for when the league eventually tries Tokyo again, Australia. I remember watching those America Bowls. I used to kind of get excited because that was always the first game of the year. So it's like, oh, cool, you get to watch football in a different country. Now
the American Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I get why the NFL does it. I personally do not care at all about any of the international stuff.
It's too much of it.
I mean, I don't have a problem with them doing it. It's a business. I understand running a business. I understand generating money, boosting revenues, finding more fans. I get it all. I just don't care for it. But, John, I do think you're right about the Saudis. I think that's something to keep your eye on. They bought golf. They're buying boxing now. They're buying all of them, all the – and they got the money in the couch cushions. That's Slager. Oh,
they're in the Formula One the like chat. It's no tomorrow's.
Andy. Yeah, they are. Yes, they are. That's as well.
It's crazy. Man. Like their imprint on that, and you know now you got what
matches. Oh, they as a wrestling guy, they pay every time WWE goes to Saudi Arabia, they get $55 million per show. $55 million per show. It's one show. It's like the everyone talks about WrestleMania. It was just in Philadelphia. It was the most successful WrestleMania financially in history. They sold out Wells Fargo Center three times. They sold out Lincoln Financial Field twice. They go to Saudi Arabia and make twice the money for one throwaway card just because they won them over there. Yeah, they if they want something, they have the money to do it. I don't think they'll want football though. That's the good part of it.
I mean, look at Live Golf. Look at what those players are making, and it's a shame as someone who likes golf.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Everybody kind of rips. You know, the pundits are ripping Scottie Scheffler. Oh, he's five wins, but he's not playing everybody. I'm like, well, that's golf's fault. That ain't Scottie Scheffler's fault.
Yeah, he's a felon, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wait.
I'm joking.
Get the masses going, John.
I do get sick of the self-righteous, though, who criticize it. And look, I get it. There's problems with Saudi money. But, you know, look at governments all over the world who are all in bed with everything. You know, and like, come on. Don't try. If there's money to be made for a business, they're going to go and make the money. You know,
legislate. Yeah, that's up. Yeah, I've had that discussion many times. I mean, that's up to the U.S. government. They allow. Businesses
exactly.
To do business in Saudi Arabia. Blame the person responsible. If you allow a business to make money, they're going to try to make money.
Yeah.
It's not their fault.
It's all capitalism.
Yeah,
exactly. That's the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's what it's built on. So, makes complete sense to me. Jeff, let's get into a lot of off-season topics, but I want to real quick go just get your takeaways from what broke down last week at minicamp. What if Jeff Kerr left minicamp thinking anything differently, better or worse about the Philadelphia Eagles?
I'm not going to overreact to how the offense looked, especially since 95.
Come on, overreact.
I got my Ed Kratz version of overreactions coming later this week, John. I'll get people riled up over that. But
good. We'll be looking forward to reading that one.
Yeah, I mean, really, this is what's tough about evaluating guys in shorts. It's guys in shorts. Yeah, that's just my takeaway from it. I agree with John, before I came in, if you were a defensive back on the Eagles, you had a great minicamp. It didn't matter if your name was Kelee Ringo, Isaiah Rogers. The cornerback competition is going to be a lot of fun. I can't say anything about – okay, you know what? I do have one. I think Mekhi Becton will probably be starting at guard week one. That's just one of my overreaction takeaways, whatever. I think the right guard could be Mekhi Becton week one. It just seems
I agree with you.
It just seems like they're trying to force it, John. They are.
He also was very in his comments at the press conference. He was very vocal about loved Philadelphia. Seemed like he wanted to have an extended career here. Big fan of Jeff Stoutland, obviously, as most offensive linemen are. But I do think you're right. I think that's definitely a possibility, a good one.
Now, the one thing Mekhi was asked when he spoke to us, was asked about what was more difficult, moving from left to right tackle or left tackle to left guard, because he was playing left guard. And he said moving sides was more difficult for him than moving inside from left tackle to left guard. So he's not as comfortable on the right side, so we got to see how it develops. But I think Lane Johnson let that cat out of the bag. Lane said, we got to get him on the field. And not that it's Lane's decision, but Lane is generally plugged into the way Jeff Stoutland is thinking. So I think they're trying to work towards that.
And Lane's basically Jason Kelce now on that offensive line. He's the elder statesman.
Yeah,
it's now, not Lane's decision, but John, don't you think Lane would have at least some voice? Well, in
that's
the
what I. That's
yeah,
what
he's going to be next to him. Yeah,
that's why I think he let the cat out of the bag. Now,
yeah, right.
If Tyler Steen shows up and plays well, they're not going to take him off the field, so he still has a chance. But I'm not sure he's ready, so we'll see how it shakes out. But that'll be one of the more interesting things, and that's why. Jeff, you had your training camp sort of standouts over at CBS. Everybody should check that out. One of my losers, as I mentioned, was Matt Hennessy, because I thought he was going to be the one pushing Tyler Steen. I don't think that's the case anymore, which is, you know, tough to say. They're not even out there. But I think from how it developed, it wasn't a good sign for Matt Hennessy.
Yeah, read the tea leaves. I mean, they signed a guard with starting experience in the league, and they're playing Mekhi Becton over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're right. Good bringing up Max Sharping as well, because that it's a double whammy for Matt Hennessy. And maybe he's just not healthy. It's a shame, because he was a good player in Atlanta before the injury started. But guess what? Justin Evans was a good player in Tampa before the injuries came. And Justin Evans fought through it and people forget he was the starting safety last year, week one, Jeff. Then
former second round pick too, a lot of talent.
Yeah, but then he got hurt again. He played, I think, 4 games and we never saw him again. Injuries are a big part of this league. And if he can't be on the field, people are gonna turn the page pretty quickly.
By the way, John, I thought John Ross had a good week. I thought he had a good couple weeks, but I still want to say to myself, is he going to be the number 3 guy, or are they going to sign somebody? Are they going to trade for somebody?
I think they're going outside the organization. But if they don't, I think John Ross is their best alternative of the guys here right now. But I find it very hard to believe that they aren't. That Howie's going to stand pat there. But we'll see. I can't see anybody else beating out John Ross from what I saw. And John's been on the couch for 2 years. Now,
John's getting open.
Yeah. You could see Howie would say, you could see the twitch in his body. He still looks like a top tier athlete. He looked good. He looked good. He looked raw. He looked not raw. He looked rusty. You know, there was the one pass he had a chance to get a second foot in. He didn't get it in. I think that stuff will, you know, he'll clean that kind of stuff up. But ultimately, Nick talked about, hey, we don't have to do it with 3 receivers. We can play 2 tight ends. We can play 2 running backs to get that third receiver involved. But that's not what you want to do. They want to find a third receiver, but
run 11 personnel. I mean,
yeah.
I was just I just have a column come out for CBSSports.com on the best move NFC teams made this offseason. And one of them was the Falcons hiring Zach Robinson to be their offensive coordinator. I didn't realize how much the Rams ran 11 personnel
All they run is 11.
Yeah, and that's all they run.
He's the king of 11.
And then I'm adding on to this, like, okay, so there's a reason why they add Darnell Mooney and Rondell Moore. Like, or they're going to put Kyle Pitts in the slot a lot more than people think. They're going to run 11 personnel, and it's going to look really good with Kirk Cousins.
Oh, my God. Play action. Sean McVay is the king of play action. Sean McVay is, 11. Yeah, Kirk's going to – if that Achilles isn't hanging, he's going to throw for 4,000 yards. You can
– He might get close to 5,000 yards.
By the way, this is how much of a freak Dan Marino was. This is why I get tired of hearing Dan Marino never won a Super Bowl. Dan Marino had Achilles injury, I think 32, and still was able to make two Pro Bowls and put up, like, not the numbers he was used to, but still put up very good numbers in his mid-30s. Meanwhile, other quarterbacks that were good but had Achilles injuries, Jim Miller's one of them, they just were never the same player.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's part of the hope with Kirk Cousins. He's not a movement-based quarterback. Either was Dan, so you don't have to worry about the mobility aspect of it. They just need functional mobility. So I think it helps those guys.
That's why I worry about Aaron Rodgers a bit, because he does run.
Yeah, he does move more than those guys, certainly.
Yeah, he'll move outside the pocket to make a big throw. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So it's something to watch with Aaron Rodgers. Yeah, but anytime, I don't know what Kirk is, 36, somewhere in that range.
I think he's 37 now, isn't he?
Yeah, anytime you're that old, it's got to be a concern. And Aaron's even older than that, so it's got to be a concern with him as well. But if he's healthy, and it's a big if, we talk about that, he's going to throw for a lot of yards in Atlanta. So fantasy football people get excited about that, if that's your thing. But moving it back to the Eagles quarterback, our buddy Martin Frank kicked off an awkward...
I saw it. I saw it. We were sitting next to him.
Yeah. So what, you know, it was just, it was, and I was talking to Martin about it afterwards. It was basically, and he described it, so I could say, he said it was a softball, and Jalen.
It was a softball.
I mean, that was a softball. That was a new level of softball. It was a teed up softball for him.
Yeah. What it basically asked, you know, what do you notice about Nick now that his role has changed? All right, pretty simple. And it was this awkward long pause.
I'll have an answer.
Chuckled a little bit. And then Jalen said, I mean, that's a great question. I don't know that I know the answer to it. And, you know, Martin kind of followed up with a little bit. Well, what do you see? And then it was like, I think he's been great in another long pause. The messages he's delivering to the team, he's trying to be very intentional with what he's saying. I think Jalen was trying to be very intentional
with
what he was saying. Jalen doesn't, or as you and I both know this, John, Jalen, when he wants a message out, it comes out.
Well, I asked him the first question. Well, the first relevant question.
And he tells you about 95% of the offense is new. You didn't even ask him that.
Which is another show of intentionality from
exactly.
him.
Exactly. That's why I was pointing it out. It's a show of his intention. He wanted it out there, and he got it out there. So I bring that up to bring up, did he want it out there? Is there a disconnect? I know people are going to love this. I don't want a WIP poll, but is there a disconnect? And more with this sort of straddling the fence with Nick Sirianni. Are we starting to see some of the problems with that? You know, because I didn't like it. I didn't like the way Jeffrey Lurie went about Nick Sirianni. Either keep him, let him do what he wants, or don't keep him. I always say that. Said the same thing with Doug. Let him keep him. Let him do what he wants, or don't keep him.
I mean, did Jalen really have a problem with the offense last year?
Yeah, he did.
And what's he complaining about?
evidently he's complaining about Nick more than Brian Johnson. That's my assumption. Which shouldn't be a surprise, but if you're a head coach and the quarterback's not on board, you're in freaking trouble.
Yeah, you are.
Major trouble. That's why, John, I would dismiss that this is anywhere close to a WIP made up poll. I think this is real. I mean, you can also look back at certain instances throughout the years of their tenure, even when things were great, where Jalen just didn't like what Nick was doing, the famous Super Bowl thing where Nick has his hand in the air and Jalen's like, put your hands down. Just little, I know it's not a huge thing, but that, you know, coupled in with what happened last year and now these comments, I don't think it looks good for Nick Sirianni. It's one of my biggest takeaways. It was one of my big takeaways from the minicamp. I don't think it looks good at all.
Jeff?
You know, I am like Jalen's answer either. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, while all this is happening, I'm like, well, Martin Frank didn't just stump Jalen Hurts. That's just the one thing.
I don't think Martin Frank had any intention of stumping Jalen Hurts. I think he teed him up a softball. Like, Jalen didn't give me a, Nick's a professional. Nick is working well with Kellen.
It's a pretty easy answer.
He could have.
It really is. Like if someone asked me to say, you know, oh, what is your relationship like with John McMullen? Oh, it's great. It's awesome. That's all you have to say.
And even if you don't like John McMullen, oh, John's a professional. It's good working with him. You know, it's not a hard thing to answer. And Jalen, and with the, if you watch it too, John read it back well, but if you watch it and you hear the pauses and the smiles, it's really an interesting.
The one thing I couldn't wait for Thursday night was to listen to it again and then get a transcript from it and read that. And I'm like, it's, you know, everybody thinks like this is like a fake controversy. It's not. I mean, it's concerning. I'll just say that. It's, you know, I've heard quarterbacks around the league, like, you only hear Lamar saying that about John Harbaugh. You only hear Herbert saying that about any of his coaches. I mean, he could have ripped Brandon Staley for 3 years. He's never ripped him, at least to me. He's never ripped to anybody like that.
Well, I wouldn't say that was a rip.
Well, no, it's not a rip, but you know where I'm going with this.
They,
you know, even if Justin Herbert doesn't think well about Brandon Staley over the years, he never gave me any indication.
You could argue it was a rip too, by the way. When someone gives you a softball that easy for you to talk up your head coach after a collapse and you completely
the smile told me the other way.
You could, I'm not saying it was a deliberate rip, but you could argue the nature of it is rip-like.
Well, then, and let me add in, so Nick Sirianni spoke as well, and he spoke after Jalen. Now, he didn't hear Jalen, but he was asked about the relationship and how it's changed. And he explained he's not with him every single second of the day like he has been in the past. So he said it's about being intentional. There's that word again. But I know this, when I'm not in there every single second of every single day, that means I'm around everybody else because my relationship with Jalen is highly important. But my relationship with, and he threw out Milton Williams, is highly important. My relationship with Clint Hurts is highly important. My relationship with Howie is highly important. And that's what you get when you're not so zeroed in on being with Jalen Hurts and the quarterbacks and the offense every single time of every single day. That was Nick's quote. This is not good for Nick Sirianni. That's my impression.
You know what bothers me about this whole thing, John? It just feels like it's going to be a lame duck year for Nick no matter what they do.
Well, that's unless they win the Super Bowl. And I'm not, if they get to the Super Bowl, maybe even, you know, a deep playoff run, whatever you describe that as. But absent that, he's a lame duck.
Which is weird to me because Jeffrey Lurie is, and we talk about it all the time, they make a lot of right decisions. For a team that has Super Bowl aspirations, for a team that goes out and signs Saquon, for a team that does what they do to try and get this team back to where they were in 22 as a Super Bowl contending team, if he was a lame duck, why bring him back?
Perhaps
they make the right decisions to do that.
Perhaps they feel the coordinators they hired are going to get him back.
Well, I do think that the coordinator relationship specifically with Jalen Hurts is more important, but the head coach is the leader of the football team. Whether he really is or not, by default, by title, he's the leader of the football team. If the quarterback's not in his corner, as Johnny Mack pointed out, that's trouble for Nick.
Did the Eagles just not get the guy they wanted?
Talking about Bill?
Yeah, I'm referring to him.
He's still out there, though. They could have had him.
Yeah. Now, I just...
Thanks to the Tango, Xander.
Well, and he's also getting paid millions of dollars to be sitting on the beach right now by Robert Kraft.
So, well, Bill was at the Brady roast saying, hey, could you get me in Philadelphia?
Yeah,
I don't. Now, obviously, it's a joke, but, you know, Jeffrey Lurie has shown no proclivity. He's been here since 94. We talked about it. Think about the coaches he hired. There's no 72-year-old entrenched guys who've been doing it forever.
He doesn't hire retreads. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Let's go to the super chat real quick because I agree with this point. We all see, and this is the contributing to our conversation here, we all see that Nick contributes nothing to this team, so why is he here? Jalen has been expressing a desire to be coached for a while.
I'm not going to go that far.
You're not going to say Nick contributes nothing, but I will say Jalen
is getting coached right now. That's
not by Nick.
Jalen Hurts won 29 of 32 stinking games at one point with Nick Sirianni's offense. So, I mean... You can't win at that level in the National Football League and contribute nothing. I get people's emotion when things don't go the way you expected, especially when you think, you know, and everybody thought they were a significant Super Bowl contender again when they were 10-1, including myself, including most people. We complained about style points and all that kind of stuff, but yada, yada, yada. I'm not dismissing the collapse because it's there, it's real. But you can't tell me this guy had the greatest stretch of Eagles football in modern Eagles history and became an idiot overnight. I don't buy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and you can't dismiss that context. Prince, we appreciate the super chat, man. Thanks for checking in. But I do, right? You're right, John. You can't just dismiss the context of a Super Bowl year, 29 or whatever the record was where they won that many games straight. I do agree, but there is a lot of signs pointing to Nick Sirianni just losing more and more and more and more.
Well, it happens. Year. Everybody's got a shelf life.
Yeah.
And sure. Believe me, Nick knows he's on the clock. He knows.
He's got to win this year.
Yeah. And that's just life in the NFL. He understands that. But this assumption that he doesn't know football or he doesn't have a hot route in his offense, which is a high school.
He forgets more about football than probably 95%.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I don't view it as that he doesn't know football. I view it more as, is he not suited to be a head coach in the NFL? Like, he might be fantastic at teaching players in another capacity. John, you talk about it all the time. Being a head coach of an NFL team is a lot. It takes a lot. It's a lot more than knowing hot routes or knowing offense.
But he's also won winning percentage. He's the winningest head coach in Eagles history.
It's true. It's a good point. There's not much of rebuttal to that. You know, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate of.
Well, there's plenty of things. No, he might be, because of his personality, he might be the quintessential shooting star. You know, he runs too hot and he's going to burn out. You know, he's probably too emotional, all that kind of stuff on the sidelines. You know, you mentioned it with Jalen, you know, being the adult in the room at times.
I mean, I work with people who say Nick's got a punchable face. And keep in mind that this person is not a Giants, Cowboys, nor Commanders fan either. This is just someone that from out west.
Well, he's got a punchable face, Jeff, because he was beating up on everybody. And he was willing to spike the football.
Yeah, but that's what it is.
And maybe he shouldn't do that, but I guarantee you all these people that want to play, he's the nicest freaking guy in the world. I mean, you're gonna like him 5 seconds in.
My whole issue when people complain about, and I thought the Kansas City thing was a little too much too. I don't particularly like going after another team's fan base, but you're crushing the Giants and you're doing what you're doing, and Giants fans have an issue with that, or Giants players have an issue with that, maybe you should, I don't know, get better and try beating them.
You know, speaking of Kansas City, I have an interesting aspect of that, because were you at Arrowhead? I don't know if you were there.
I didn't go to Arrowhead last year.
It is a really cramped environment underneath Arrow. It's an older stadium. The hallways are really small.
They're trying to renovate that in the worst way.
Yeah.
Right now.
I got caught in the Eagles locker room when Nick was going to do his post-game press conference. And it took me forever to try to get to the post-game press conference. And he was nice enough to, because I didn't get my question in, so he was nice enough to do a walk and talk with me going back to the Eagles locker room. Now, this thing was interrupted. I kid you not, Jeff. We're talking about maybe two city blocks between that.
It's a long walk.
two small city blocks. Not that long. But so it was quite a while. We got stopped. I kid you not. 20 times between that walk, he got stopped when he was talking to me 20 times from people to Kansas City coming up to congratulate him. Wow. Everybody loves him there. He used to coach there. His outburst was more about beating a team that he loves so much and beating an organization that he loves so much.
Well, I think he met his wife there,
all that kind of stuff. Yeah, the Super Bowl. But those Kansas City people freaking love the guy.
I know the organization does.
Yeah.
Some people in the organization do. Not everybody.
Oh, they love him. I'm talking about the organization. These were all Chiefs organizational people. That's who would kept stopping him. That's what I'm saying. My only point of saying that, there was no, that dislike the Chiefs fans. I was just really excited to beat Andy Reid and the Chiefs, and for all the obvious reasons.
Obviously, John, and again, this is why I love how you bring this up, because this is where we live in a society now where everything is optics, optics, optics. And I'm always one of those, you just got to watch what you're doing at all times. It's unfortunate, but you got to do it. Like, it's like the whole... We you know, you and I have talked about this, the whole Caitlin Clark stuff. Like anything she does or doesn't do now, or anything someone does to her is just blown up to the 1,000,000th degree. It feels like that's with Nick Sirianni right now.
Yeah. But the larger point is, you know, Jeffrey Lurie and how he set this up. And I don't like it. And I said it from day one. And it's getting, to me, when you look at Jalen's comments and you look at Nick's comments, it's just focusing down on that. I don't think this was the best setup by Jeffrey Lurie. Shit or get off the pot. If you don't want him, fire him. If you want him, let him be the head coach.
And maybe that's what Jalen's point was, what you just said. It's like, look, I don't have an issue with the guy, but you're either committed to him or you're not.
I wonder if it was a self-serving reason to keep him around, where I think they might know that the writing was on the wall with him. But how bad does it look to fire Doug 3 years after the Super Bowl, then hire a coach who goes to the
Super
Bowl
in
the second year and fire him a year later?
But it's also a bad look to start 10-1 and lose 6 of 7.
It's only happened once. But I'm saying from an organizational standpoint, if you're Jeffrey Lurie, I just fired Doug not that long ago. I mean, it was in recent memory. Right after 3 years removed from a Super Bowl, our first ever, our only Super Bowl in franchise history, Doug raised the crown with Nick Foles over freaking Brady and Belichick. It's like David versus Goliath, and he's out the door. And now Nick goes back, and a year later, he's gone. That would be a bad look. A bad look on the Eagles.
But you know what's also a bad look? A head coach who can't figure out why his team keeps losing 6-7 or knows the answer to why his team's losing 6-7.
It's a bad look on Nick, Jeff. It's not as bad of a look on the organization. The organization set that precedent.
That's the thing. This is what is the one thing I will criticize about the Philadelphia Eagles. Unlike the Kansas City Chiefs, the Baltimore Ravens, these franchises that seem to figure out how to win every year, the Eagles always have this like year or two where they just absolutely suck. Like, and I can't figure, or like last year, they didn't absolutely suck, but they absolutely sucked
for seven games.
And 2020, I know it was a COVID year, but they were horrible. And the quarterback was horrible. And Doug is a good coach and couldn't figure it out. Jacksonville, last year, you saw Doug's flaws with Jacksonville. They 8-3, number one seed in the AFC. Same time the Eagles are number one seed in the NFC. And they just imploded. And like, I can't figure out why the Eagles go through stretches like this. 2012, they did. Andy Reid is, I'll say it, I still say he's a better coach than Belichick, and he had a 4-12 season. But the Eagles just caved. They said, oh, no, you're not good anymore. Time has passed. Yeah, ever since.
Well, everybody. Because talent is cyclical. And if you're around long enough, you're going to have bad seasons. Even Andy's had bad seasons. Yeah. Andy's a great coach. And he's a great coach in good seasons. He's a great coach in bad seasons. And he's a great coach in everything in between. Yeah, I think that's the part that's missed. Look, your goal as a coach should be to maximize what you have. And sometimes you don't have enough to compete for a championship, but you might, your best coaching job, if you're around for as long as Andy Reid and you give Andy the truth serum, he might tell you his best coaching job was a 9-7 year or an 8-8 year.
Or his
where he didn't maybe feel, last year when you lose all those players, you have a tough start to the year and then you go and you win it.
Or his first year when they were 5-11. That wasn't a 5-11 football team. He made them a 5-11 football team.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can't – if you don't have the horses, you can't win a championship. And Andy, you know, the to me what proves Andy's greatness and his whole plan when he was here was, you know, be consistently good basically so the stars align 1 year. And you make a run, and he never got it done here. And now he's out in Kansas City. He's got Patrick Mahomes, so he's got the cheat code now. But the fact that he's been so consistently good for so long, that speaks to his greatness more than the number of championships. But I know nobody's going to agree.
I know covering the AFC Championship game and talking to the players on the Chiefs I've talked to and people in the organization just from, you know, that whole Super Bowl run last year, their big thing was after they won the AFC Championship. Remember we were done on Christmas? That seemed to be like their rally cry. Like, oh, we're done. We're done. You know, can't
it
see
was,
Chiefs.
Jeff, you're right. That was their rallying cry all year.
That was when everybody in the locker room said it. It was great, honestly.
When I covered the NBA, Jeff, I try to sell this one. Larry Brown's the smartest basketball guy I think that has ever lived.
I love Larry Brown.
He's got his issues, nomadic. He liked to hop from place to place. He was never happy, blah, blah, blah. I from every basketball person I've ever talked to, they just are in awe of the guy. And I once wrote a column that Larry Brown's a better coach than Phil Jackson. And it's not particularly close. Nobody gets that. Nobody gets that. But he is.
He wins with less. He didn't need Michael Jordan. Didn't need Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, whatever.
He does more with what he has. And that's the definition of coaching. a lot of people could have won. And I'm not saying Phil's a bad coach, but and he got to a position.
Phil's a great coach. It's just, yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Well, what
he got in a position to pick and choose where he wanted to go. And he's a very smart guy. And that's part of it as well. And after having all the success with maybe the greatest player of all time, or certainly the greatest player of his generation, then he could pick and choose and go win a bunch of more titles. Cause he was saying, hey, let's go play with Shaq and Kobe.
And I can coach Kobe because Kobe has the same mentality as Michael.
Yeah. But if you ask basketball people, it's not even a conversation. And that's what I think people don't understand about coaching. It's not about how many wins you have. It's about making the players you do have better and making the group better.
Vic Fangio said best, great players.
Yeah.
Guys, let's fast forward real quick. Let's go to 2025. It's June 10th of 2025. This time next year. Is Nick Sirianni going to be the head coach of the football team? And if he is, what did he do in the 2024 season to secure that job for you next year?
I'll start. I'll say the Eagles reach the conference championship game and he'll be back.
I think he'll
be back if they reach the conference championship game. I would lean towards at this stage. I don't like the way this is unfolding. If you're asking me to predict now,
I am. That's what I'm asking.
This is it. I think he's a lame duck. I think it's a horrible situation. I've said that from day one. You know, now the quarterback is not tethered to the coach. And the quarterback makes $255 million. And they're not going to take the coach over the quarterback. I don't like it. I don't like
and
the way it
is. If you look at Eagles history with Jeffrey Lurie outside of Andy Reid, coaches don't last long here. But I mean, you can say that around the NFL, but coaches don't have a long shelf life.
In a lot of ways, I think Jeffrey Lurie has set him up to fail. Oh.
I don't think this is like a 98. 2015, 2020 Eagles situation, because I think this team will win, but I've seen this story before and I know how it ends.
I mean, we talk about expectations. I have expectations. Everybody in the chat has expectations. Jeff Kerr, you have expectations. John McMullen probably has some level of expectations. The only one that matters is Jeffrey Lurie. I mean, what are his expectations for this team? He kept Nick. He allowed Howie to continue to be aggressive. Howie had a crazy offseason of extending players. He shelled out nearly $500 million.
I think Howie had a tremendous offseason.
I do too, but he with that, what does Jeffrey Lurie need to see this year in order for him to remain confident in the head coach? I think it's a lot. I think it's a highly successful year and Nick is gone.
John, do you think the leadership committee on this team, Hurts, Brown, Lane, BG, Slay, I'll add Saquon into this. Do you think that can mask anything that could be an issue with Nick?
No. I mean, I don't think leadership is a problem with Nick.
I don't think leadership's a problem in this locker room either. I know some people will probably disagree with me on that, but.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it's just not a good setup because you're trying to service two masters from Jeffrey Lurie's perspective and say, basically what Xander said, he didn't want to fire him because it would be a bad look, and he kept him with reduced power, and I'm not even sure. Look, Nick could have went down the Doug Peterson route and said no. But he didn't want to do that.
And he
has more of a political layer of him, and he could to him, and he could see the lay of the land, and he understood he had to make changes.
But Doug also had the biggest ace in the hole. Well, I won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, only one ever. And I did it with a backup quarterback against the greatest coach quarterback combination in the history of football.
Well, I would argue Jeffrey and Howie think they're more responsible.
Which
that.
Is a joke. Do you think two guys wearing a suit are more responsible?
Well, I'll just say this in Jacksonville.
I'm just speaking.
I'll just say this in Jacksonville, and this is in Jacksonville right now with Doug. There are questions of why Doug Peterson is so married to Press Taylor.
Yeah, it is weird. I will say that's a separate.
There's been talks in the organization about this. Like, yeah. They're like, okay, Doug, we like you a lot. We want you to be here, but just so you know,
yeah,
we're not too pleased with how this guy is developing Trevor Lawrence right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're going to take Trevor Lawrence over Doug Peterson, and the Eagles are going to take Jalen Hurts over Nick Sirianni. That's just the way the NFL works. That's not unique at all. So that's my concern about not being, at least Doug is still, you know, firmly entrenched with Trevor Lawrence. So if Trevor has a bounce back season, not that he played poorly, but he played poorly down the stretch. But if he gets going to where people think he should be, Doug's going to be fine. If he doesn't, he's not going to be fine. But they're connected together. Nick is no longer connected with Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, and that's the difference. Like, yeah. Trevor Lawrence believes in Doug, and Doug believes in Trevor, and the Jaguars believe in both of them. They just changed around the whole roster to basically help them to make sure that collapse doesn't happen again. Yeah, you're right, John. That's where the point comes across. It's where's the connection between Nick and Jalen?
And I'll say, you know, assistant coaches, that's been a big thing as well, because this is you know, no matter how many times I say Nick hires these assistant coaches, nobody believes me. You should believe Bobby King, because I don't think Bobby King has ever lied a day in his life. Because I don't think he cares enough to lie. And he was asked flat out, how'd you end up here? And, you know, the loquacious Bobby King said, the head coach called me, interviewed and got the job. There was no other connection. Nope. The head coach. That was it. End of story.
Believe it or not, the head coach does hire his assistants.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Nick hired Kellen. I want to believe he did.
He did. Now there's two. See, this is the part where, and sorry, we're keeping you late at Jeff Gersey.
I'm off today, John. Keep me as long as you want.
Appreciate it, Jeff.
Good to hear. Appreciate it, Jeff. CBSSports.com. That's the political nature of it. No, to me, there are two different questions. If we're up to Nick and he knew that he could be the offensive leader, so to speak, no, I don't think he would have hired him. But he knew he had to hire somebody, and he hired Kellen Moore. Now, I also think he probably would have hired Cliff Kingsbury if Cliff was amenable to keeping all of Nick's guys. All of Nick's guys are still here.
Yeah. The only guy Kellen brought was Doug Dustmeyer.
Yeah. So, you know, did he hire Kellen Moore? Yes. Did he want to hire Kellen Moore? If he got the truth serum in him, probably not.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to do it. But he knew that if he walked into Jeffrey Lurie's office and said, you know what, we're going to fix this thing. I'm great. Brian's great. Alex Tanny's great.
Kingsbury thought Brian Johnson was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid explanation. But I will say, if I interviewed for a job with somebody, or if I interviewed for a job, and one of the other guys that was also interviewed for the exact same job, I had the chance to hire him, and take away some of my role for that same job I was hired for, that would give me some agita.
Yeah, Xander, it happens everywhere. It's never the guy you want. Let's just put it that way. But it's the guy you're getting.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. I don't know, guys. I hope I'm wrong, but this to me seems like one of those problems that could impede the entire team, regardless of how good the offense is, regardless of how much players there is, how much talent there is, regardless of what Vic Fangio does. I mean, if Nick Sirianni doesn't have control of his football team, how far is the team going to go? I don't see it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they can have great success.
This year he has control of this football team.
Yeah, we will. We certainly will.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing will be if the offense struggles, and you know, what does Nick do?
Well, which, evidently, it's going to be on Kellen Moore now.
I don't think it is. And again, it's all dependent on expectations. I think this offense is too talented to drop out of being a top 10 offense. That's, to me, is the floor. Everybody expects them to be the greatest show on turf, or, and I don't think they're going to be that. So, you know, when people start criticizing Kellen Moore, and it's coming, be prepared for it.
You know when the Eagles will be considered the greatest show on turf? When they decide to give Paris Campbell and John Ross the football, because we know we're going to have people complain about that. Why aren't they getting the football this year?
Why aren't they getting the football?
Why isn't Quez Watkins getting the football? No, I don't want him to touch the football. There's one ball, boys.
Yeah. Why isn't Saquon Barkley getting the football in the passing game? That's coming.
I can't wait for that. I honestly can't wait for to hear how big of a disappointment Saquon is all season long. By the way, guys, you know Rob Thompson's a terrible manager. Did you guys ever hear this one?
Don't they have the best record in baseball?
Yeah, I had to hear it all day yesterday. I'm like, did you like just start watching the Phillies yesterday? Oh, I was surprised you weren't in London.
I got to be honest. I was surprised you weren't in London.
I was too busy hanging out with John McMullen all week to be in London.
There you go.
Yeah, that's where would you rather be? Yeah, London.
I always want to be a people pleaser.
London, or mini camp.
I was gonna tweet it, and I didn't, because I do have respect for Pass Yonk Avenue Bar in London. To me, it is so stupid to go to London and hang out in a Philly theme bar. It is like, if I'm going to London, I'm seeing London. I don't want to see Philadelphia. I can see it here.
Jeff, that's a good point. Still with you
that's
on that.
Fair point.
There's probably many people who are not with you on that. Even the guy who cuts my hair, I talked to him. He's a barber. He listens to Jacob. He's a big Eagles guy, big sports fan. Everywhere he goes on a road trip every year. Everywhere he goes, he finds the Eagles bar, whether it's L.A. He went to the international game they played in a couple years ago. I'm like, really? Is that what you want to do when you go out there? He loves it, and I'm like, look, to each his own, do what you got
to
do.
There's a place in Myrtle Beach. I used to go to Myrtle Beach every year. There's a place in Myrtle Beach that makes really good Philly cheesesteaks. And, you know, I'm not saying they're the best or anything like that, but everybody goes, why don't we go there to eat one night? I'm like, I don't want a cheesesteak. I can eat cheesesteaks every day of my life here. I don't need to go eat one.
It makes no sense. Yeah.
I like to experience different cultures. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're traveling, you might. That's the big excitement of it, to go see something different. I'm with you 100% on that.
To go to a Philly bar in London is like going to New York and eating a Sbarro pizza.
Yeah.
Not happening.
I'm with you, Jeff Kerr. It's goofy. Make sure everybody follows Jeff on Twitter and X at Jeff Kerr CBS. Does great work. Great job covering even a little bit of Phillies, Eagles, NFL, and just does great work for CBS. So make sure you follow him on Twitter, read all his work at CBS. Jeff, thanks for spending the extended time with us today, man. We appreciate you joining the show.
Yeah, boys. Thanks.
Thanks, bud.
There's Jeff Kerr, and I leave that conversation more concerned about Nick than when I started the show. And I got to be honest, it's not like I was feeling good about Nick. I mean, I was not in a good spot. I thought Nick was one of my biggest concerns, and now it's exaggerated, because John, you're the voice of reason to me. I listen to Dan Cilio, who's, you know, overwhelmingly one way. I read Eagles Twitter, who's, you know, tends to be one way. You're my voice of reason. If you're telling me I got to be worried about Nick Sirianni more than I'm even thinking, I'm concerned. I don't know how far the team can go if that's the case.
Well, I don't understand the path. I don't understand it. So I, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but if I were Jeffrey Lurie and I don't have a $7.5 billion asset, to me, there's two clear paths. Either you trust the guy and let him be the head coach, or you don't, and you move on and get somebody else to be the head coach. That's it. That's the decision I'm making. And ultimately, I would have kept Nick Sirianni because of his larger record and what we talked about, and what he's been able to accomplish at the head coach. I would have given him one more chance. And then if it's another disappointing season, then you probably move on. I said the same thing about Doug Peterson. And even more so Doug, because he did win the Super Bowl, probably earned the right to have that one mulligan and try to get back. Because remember, that was a bad season. No question about it. The COVID season, but there was a lot of extenuating circumstances. I think people forget they made the playoffs in 2018 and they had a little decent run. They made the playoffs in 2019. He earned the right to have one more chance. That's always been, and I'm a continuity guy, so I'm always going to lean more toward continuity because you're starting over at some point. You're going to have some growing pains if you change coaches. So that's where I was. And he tried to straddle the fence. And I never think that's a good idea. But now, and maybe I'm reading too much into Jalen's, but I know Jalen well enough to, he's very, that's the word of the day, intentional. Nick talked about being intentional with his relationship. Jalen's very intentional. When I asked him that question, he wanted it out there that people knew this is basically a completely new offense and there's going to be some growing pains. He did that on purpose.
Yeah, which in its own way is a little bit of a shot at Nick based on what Nick said prior to Jalen at other press conferences.
Well, and Jalen's not listening either. He's just talking.
No, but I think, I don't know. To me, that was, intentional. Again, that before the Nick Sirianni comments does allude to a certain point that Jalen is trying to make.
Yeah, I don't think they're on the same page is the problem. And when you're not on the same page as your quarterback, you got problems. Because they're going to choose the quarterback, unless the quarterback's terrible.
Well, the quarterback's cap hits $100 million if they move on from him next year. They're not moving Jalen Hurts. I don't care what. They could go 1-16 this year. They're not moving on from Jalen Hurts.
Well, they might if they're 1-16.
I don't know. $100 million dead cap hit, Johnny Mac?
Well, Jeffrey's been, what does he care at this point, but yeah, they're going to be a good team. It's just a matter, but the expectations are what the expectations are. And everybody thinks, everybody thinks they're a Super Bowl contender. And by everybody, I mean Eagles fans, bunch of national media people, Howie Roseman, Jeffrey Lurie. They think they're a Super Bowl contender. Those are the expectations. They don't reach those expectations. The layer of scapegoating has already been removed, so the clock has started on Nick Sirianni. There are no more buffers for not reaching expectations.
How much do you think it matters, the relationship between Jalen and Nick, let's just assume it's all Kellen's offense, does it
matters
matter
a lot. That's it my does, concern. Right? Yeah. It matters immensely.
I agree, but you do
franchise quarterback and head coach. Even at the end of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, that was the whole thing. They couldn't stand each other anymore.
And yeah, but Bill even then, they respected each other. They might not have liked each other. They might've been oil and water together, but I think they respected each other because they knew the other one was there to help them win. And eventually it did burn out. But for the duration that it worked, I don't even know if they ever liked each other. I don't think like would be the right word. I think they respected each other.
Well, yeah, I don't. It's not about like. Yeah.
It's not about like at all. But I'm sensing a disrespect, not disrespect intentionally, but I don't believe Jalen believes in Nick Sirianni.
I don't think it has anything to do with disrespect or anything of that nature. I think he's been removed from the equation, and I don't think any longer. It was confirmed by himself. He was removed from the equation with Jalen Hurts, essentially. Not that he's never going to talk to him again, but as he's explained, he was with him every day, every moment. Was him and Jalen Hurts, as most teams are when you have that setup. offensive head coach, quarterback. They're tethered together, and they are no longer tethered together.
Let's go to a commercial break. Before I do that, I'd like to hear from the chat on this. So if you guys, well, during the break, I'm going to read all the replies. If you guys could drop me, let's go 1 through 10, your level of concern with Nick Sirianni. I'd like to hear what you guys think. If I'm crazy sitting up here, if I'm listening to John, I'm like, I don't know how this team is going to work with Nick Sirianni. But what's your guys' level of concern in the chat for Nick Sirianni, basement show enough, James? Just drop me a 1 through 10 on 10 being most concerned, 1 being Nick took us to a Super Bowl. I'm not worried about him, which is perfectly fine if that's your answer too. But we'll take a commercial break. Leave those responses in the chat for me. I appreciate that. Let's get to a commercial break. One more segment to go here on Birds 365. I want to talk about the pressure going into 24, but we're not going to include Nick Sirianni because we beat that to a pulp today. So I'm going to let that go after the break. So stay tuned on Birds 365. We'll be right back.
If you missed any of today's show on the Jacob Media channel, listen to the podcast on your way home. Available on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.